who I would happily call my friends if they would allow me to do so.
Mozambique, finally, where do you go from here?
That's a difficult question because, you know, this story is not just about me, even though the book is about me. It's much bigger. It's even bigger than Guantanamo. It's bigger than Bagram and Kandahar because it's now part of something that's so huge that, sadly, as long as places like these black holes of detention exist, the ones that are known like Bagram, Kandahar, and Guantanamo, and the ones that are unknown that may be in Diego Garcia and elsewhere, perhaps in Thailand or in Egypt, I have a sad but important job to do, and that is to try to explain, to sometimes be a bridge between misunderstanding and recognizing where people are going wrong on both sides, and to point out quite clearly that the abuses that are taking place in Guantanamo and elsewhere need to be stopped. But of course, you know, just recently today we've been told that Camp 6 has been built, something I knew from a long time ago, another state-of-the-art super maximum security prison installation in Guantanamo Bay, and that is there to stay. At the cost of tens of millions of dollars, I can't see the United States government closing it down, despite the fact that President Bush recently, after the suicide, said that he would like to see the place closed. I think he was playing to a public voice, not to the reality on the ground.
Mozambique, author of Enemy Combatant, My Imprisonment at Guantanamo, Bagram, and Kandahar. Last year, he was released from the U.S. prison at Guantanamo. He had been imprisoned for a total of about 3 years. Speaking to us from Birmingham, England, where he lives with his family. That is the end of today's program. If you'd like to get a transcript or the video or audio pod of the show, the podcast, or if you'd like to hear the full interview with Robert Fisk in Beirut, you can go to our website at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Sharif Abdelkadous, John Hamilton, Elizabeth Press, Yoruba Richin, Aaron Mate, and Frank Lopez. Mike DeFilippo and Nick Marsilio are engineers. Special thanks to Danielle Strandberg-Peshkin and Megan Whitney and Samantha Chambly, Uri Galed, and Angela Alston. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, this is DJ Roy informing you that there's life after the reggae marathon. That's right. There's more reggae music each and every Thursday from 10 to midnight, on Fridays from 7 to 9 p.m., and on Saturdays from 12 noon till 3 p.m. It's life after the marathon. Reggae music at its best. WUSB 90.1 FM.
And you're listening to radio station WUSB, Stony Brook. It's 6 o'clock. Time for Off the Wall. We'll be right back. Yes, I know. Get on with it already. It's 4 minutes into the intro, I realize. It's just hard to gather your energy together on a day like this, but I'm trying. I really am. See, the studio actually has air. There's no air outside. Outside, the air has been sucked out into space or something, and it's really hot. It's really muggy. Everybody's complaining, and no one's in a good mood. But that's just what happens occasionally here in this part of the country, this part of the world, this time of year. So we're not going to be focusing too much on complaining about the heat, at least I hope not. Because for once, we don't have to complain about it in here. It's actually somewhat bearable. Usually they pump in the heat right about now, I guess, to test it or something. But fortunately it's humane conditions. We have all kinds of announcements and things for people who might be suffering out there. Of course, you have to be suffering within our listening area. That is the area that we transmit to via the FM airwaves. If you're suffering someplace else, we can't really help you as far as this goes. We can give you advice, but as far as the actual announcements that are local here, well, maybe there's something similar going on where you are. In order to provide the college community and county residents respite from the oppressive heat forecast for the next few days, Suffolk County has asked... it's a different college. This isn't the college that I'm at right now. It's kind of weird. They've asked the college, meaning Suffolk County Community College, to keep the cafeterias on all three campuses air-conditioned and open to the public from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. on Tuesday, August 1st, 2006, and that has been extended through Thursday, August the 3rd. Yeah, so I guess if you're near the campuses of Suffolk County Community College, which I believe are Selden, Brentwood, and what's the other one? Riverhead? I think the other one's Riverhead. It's out there. Well, if you're out there, you know where it is. Go there. Go to the cafeteria. Hang out in the air-conditioned area. I don't know what happens here on Stony Brook campus. I guess we can advise people to go to our cafeteria, but the air conditioning might not be on. I don't know. Basically, just come to campus, pick a building, and hang out in it for a while. No one's going to kick you out. We're human beings here. But don't go exploring further, you know, go into the sub-basement and figure out a way to get into the secretive Stony Brook tunnels, which I believe they sealed off. Without checking first to make sure there weren't people still inside, they've sealed the tunnels off. We used to wander around these things, well, years ago. It was great. You could get from one side of the campus to the other. There are all kinds of pipes and dials and creatures down there. It's all still there. It's just very hard to get to. I mean, I can tell you where the entrances are, but it won't do you much good because they're welded shut. And some of them have digital locks, which, yes, I do know the combination to, but it wouldn't be right for me to just give it to you. You have to figure it out. Yeah. There are grates. You can lift up the grate, but you need a lot of people to do that, and then you have to lower yourself down and hope that there's no lock. What am I doing? What am I... I shouldn't be giving out this information. It must be heat stroke or something. Okay, look, if you come to campus... behave yourselves. Don't do any of that. Don't go into tunnel systems or explore the elevators and take it to the floors of the Health Science Center where you're not supposed to go and walk out on that bridge that connects the hospital to the Health Science Center and get a good look at Long Island, where it's rumored that you can see New York City if the weather is clear enough, which it certainly is not now because it's rather hazy and muggy, and you're lucky if you can see the ground. No, don't do that. Go to some place that's nice and air-conditioned. You know what? Forget the campus. Go to 7-Eleven, okay? That's always the best bet when it's hot and muggy. Just go into a 7-Eleven and look like you're going to buy something at some point. Yeah, they'll glare at you, but if enough people do it at the same time, there aren't enough glares to go around. Okay, if you're feeling a little self-conscious there, just go to a mall. Wander around the mall all day long. Yes, I know it's a sacrifice. I know it's horrible, but it's usually air-conditioned. And you can wash out the stench later when you get home. There's all sorts of heat tips that that you can follow. The one good thing about our capitalist system here is that we demand comfort and have air conditioning and ice everywhere you go. So, by all means, take advantage. And please, in all seriousness, look after the animals and the elderly. I guess I probably shouldn't have put that in the same sentence like that. I didn't mean to offend anybody, but I'm saying look after Those are the two entities that tend to suffer the most in heat. Well, let's focus on the elderly first. Your grandparents, elderly aunts or uncles, or maybe yourself. Just make sure that windows are open and they're in communication with the rest of the world and things are available. I remember a couple of years ago, I think hundreds of elderly people in Chicago died because they didn't open their windows because they were afraid of what might come in. Things other than air. A lot of people live without air conditioning. A lot of people live in sweltering conditions and they are afraid of the outside world. So you gotta check up on them. Animals, make sure that your dog or cat or whatever you have has enough fresh water. It's not enough just to put the water out and walk away. You gotta change it every now and then because some animals get very fussy and they'll sooner die of dehydration than drink from a dirty bowl. Silly, I know, but that's how some animals are. So just make sure that they're taken care of. They have air. They have places to seek shelter if it gets too oppressively hot. Okay, and that's what's going on. It's weird. I was watching CNN before, and they were showing temperatures from all over the country. And New York, swear to God, New York, it said 108 degrees. 108 degrees. I could not believe it. I mean, it didn't feel that hot. It was hot, all right, but 108. I've been in Arizona and Nevada and places where it really is 108 or 120. It's not as humid, but still, you feel that kind of heat. And you really feel it if it's humid. And then I looked a little closer, and in the upper right-hand corner, in tiny letters, it said, heat index. That's a way of exaggerating the number. It's like wind chill factor. It's like the opposite of that. You see, when things get a little bit extreme, you want to sort of really drive it home and make people think there's something to really panic about. So, yeah, you can drive the temperature up even higher by making it the heat index, which is what it really feels like, but it's not. It may feel like you're standing in the pits of hell, and the temperature there might be 100 degrees Celsius. Who knows? No one's ever measured it and lived to tell about it. And you might just get away with measuring that instead of the actual temperature, what it feels like. So that's the kind of nonsense you have to deal with in the media right now. Exaggerations of temperature and things like that. Meanwhile, you have power issues. Last week, about 2 weeks ago, it was during Hope. It was 2 weekends ago. No, wait, that's 1 weekend. You know, ever since the conference, I have lost track of time. I don't even know. Conference has been over for about, 10 days now? Okay. During the conference, which was July 21, 22, 23, there were still power outages throughout the city from the heat wave that had taken place the week before. Yeah, for I think up to 10 days, residents of Queens had no power. It was unbelievable. Same thing is possible with this heat wave right now, which I think is actually a little bit worse. And out here on Long Island, the Long Island Power Authority is expecting a new peak demand today as Long Islanders try to stay cool in the region's latest heat wave. Repair crews are working 16-hour shifts and are in position in remote areas. More than 2,300 customers lost power yesterday when 29 fuses melted and 43 pole-top transformers broke down. Power was restored in an average of 2.7 hours, much better than Con Ed's 10 days. This morning, another 164 customers lost power, so if you're one of them, you're somebody special because that's relatively few. The National Weather Service forecast temperatures in the high 90s through Thursday with the aforementioned heat index, which factors in humidity, reaching 107 to 109 degrees. It's going to be very difficult to breathe. The air is going to be very thick, said Nancy Figueroa, a meteorologist with the National Weather Service. The young and the old should be very careful to stay in cool places because it's very dangerous. You know, I forgot, if you have a baby, an infant, lying around, just make sure that... as with the animals and the elderly, they stay in a hydrated place, get fluids, that kind of thing. I mean, this is common sense, but still, we have to tell people these things. Anyway, it's going to be a tough couple of days, they say. Everyone in Long Island has to help us and help themselves. That's a word from the power authority. So help out your local power authority by not using power whenever possible. It's funny, they want you to use power all the other days of the year, but now when we really need it, they don't want you to use power. It's okay. So, yeah, we'll be keeping updated on all that. This heat wave is supposed to last for another couple of days until, I think, Friday or something. And then we'll be complaining about the thunderstorms that move through to drive the air out. Okay, and today is an interesting day. Today is an anniversary. Have you heard about this? This is the big anniversary. MTV, 25 years old as of today. August 1st, 1981. That was the day. The day that lives in infamy. When MTV first went on the air. And oh my goodness, what a whole lot has come out of that. Actually, today, if you get the channel VH1 Classic, which I believe only recently started to air commercials, God bless them, they actually air music from that period of time, which sort of brings back memories. And before they had commercials, it was actually watchable. And today they're airing the first day of MTV. They're doing it in kind of a weird way, though. They're doing it so that you don't actually live out the whole MTV experience. They're putting updated information about the music, and they're having current day VJs telling you about the first day. But there's enough in there to make you feel like you're actually going back in time a little bit. From Wikipedia, MTV is defined as a young adult cable television network headquartered in New York City and London. Does anybody else think Wikipedia has gotten a little too close to The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy? Like the real Hitchhiker's Guide, the one they carry around in the series where they punch in something and it reads back what that thing is. Yeah. What is MTV? MTV is a young adult cable television network headquartered in New York City and London. Instant information. Earth, mostly harmless. You know what? Plug in Earth, see if it says that. I don't know. Anyway, continuing here, originally devoted to music videos, especially popular music videos. Yeah, you know, there's two statements to be made there. They used to play music videos, being music television, which they hardly ever do anymore. And it's all about being popular. Popular music videos, what they define as popular. How does something get defined as popular? I don't know. I have some theories, and I have a few to read, actually. But originally devoted to music videos and popular music videos, MTV has since opted to show less music-oriented programming and has become an outlet for a variety of different television shows aimed at adolescent and young adults. Broadcasting began on August 1, 1981 as an operation of Warner Amex Satellite Information Company. Remember them? A joint venture of Warner Communications and American Express. WASAC, as it was known. That didn't catch on, did it? Consisted of two channels before the MTV launch, Nickelodeon and the Movie Channel. In 1983, Warner and Amex spun off the Movie Channel to a company in partnership with Viacom, who contributed the pay TV channel Showtime. The new entity became known as Showtime / the Movie Channel. Yeah, they're not very imaginative coming up with names. In 1984, Warner and Amex attempted to take some cash out of their WASAC investment. The companies divested WASAC, and it was renamed MTV Networks, Inc. The parent companies registered for a stock IPO, which eventually went public at $15 per share. You know, school kids have to learn this these days. I don't know if people in other countries realize this. You guys have to memorize the kings and when the Magna Carta was signed and when the Ottoman Empire fell, all that kind of jazz. We have to memorize stock options, when things went public, mergers. I really think it's a distortion of the educational system. I know it's not a very popular view, but that's just how I feel. Anyway, continuing here. A year later, MTV saw the introduction of a sister channel, VH1, short for Video Hits 1. I never understood what the 1 was for. Video Hits 1. What is the 1 referring to? One hit? They're playing the same song over and over again? Does every song they play have to have been number 1 at some point? Is it the first channel of several? Are we due for Video Hits 2 someday? Nobody can answer these questions. In 1986, MTV Networks was acquired by Viacom and was renamed. Let me read that again, because I left out a word, and I guess it was an important word. In 1986, MTV Networks, Inc. was acquired by Viacom, Inc., and was renamed MTV Networks. without the ink. Yeah, that was their accomplishment there. And it's still a division of Viacom today. By 1987, Viacom itself was the target of a successful hostile takeover by National Amusements. Those are the guys who run the movie theaters, right? And who knows what else. According to the history here, MTV was actually created in 1977 when Warner Amex Cable launched the first two-way interactive cable TV system known as Cube, Q-U-B-E, in Columbus, Ohio. I actually remember that. The Cube system offered many specialized channels, including a children's channel called Pinwheel, which would later become Nickelodeon. One of these specialized channels was Sight on Sound, a music channel that featured concert footage and music-oriented TV programs. With the interactive Cube service, viewers could vote for their favorite songs and artists. Well, that's a lot more than we can do now, isn't it? Anyway, you have more information, just go to wikipedia.org and read all about it. But some interesting things there, interesting little facts. Along with all the other MTV channels that have popped into being. MTV Canada, MTV UK, MTV Ireland, MTV Spain, MTV France, MTV Germany, MTV Europe. It just keeps going on and on. There's no end in sight. But it hasn't been a joyous occasion the whole way through by any stretch of the imagination. MTV has always had its critics, always had people who are very disappointed with the way that it's turned out. Let me read you a couple of quotes from someone that really knows. Let's see, what's the best place to start? Here we go. "And so it was our beloved corporate gods claimed they created rock video, allowing it to sink as low in 1 year as commercial TV has in 25. It's the new frontier, they say. It's wide open. Anything can happen. But you've got a lot of nerve to call yourself a pioneer when you're too goddamn conservative to take real chances." "Tin-eared, graph paper-brained accountants instead of music fans call all the shots at giant record companies now. The lowest common denominator rules. Forget honesty. Forget creativity. The dumbest buy the mostest. That's the name of the game." And of course, these are lines from the Dead Kennedys song, MTV, Get Off the Air. Which you might have trouble understanding since they, in the vein of punk music, they kind of sing it fast and sometimes it's difficult to make out the words. So it's good to read the words occasionally. Such as, "Hi, I'm your video DJ. I always talk like I'm wigged out on Quaaludes. I wear a satin baseball jacket everywhere I go. My job is to help destroy what's left of your imagination by feeding you endless doses of sugar-coated mindless garbage. So don't create, be sedate, be a vegetable at home. And thwack on that dial. If we have our way, even you will believe this is the future of rock and roll. How far will you go? How low will you stoop to tranquilize our minds with your sugar-coated swill? You've turned rock and roll rebellion into Pat Boone sedation, making sure nothing's left to the imagination." Yeah. 25 years of MTV. I don't know, I think I blame them for a lot of what's going on in the world. It sort of brought us into this subdued state of contentment. Anyway, if we take phone calls later, which I'd like to try, one of the questions will be if MTV has affected you, if you watch MTV, what you like about MTV, what you don't like about MTV. What I don't like about MTV is the censorship, the unnecessary censorship. First of all, it's a cable network. You don't have to censor. You don't have to censor like you do over the air. In fact, that's sort of what makes the Dead Kennedys song wrong, because they're not actually on the air. They're on cable and satellite, which technically, I guess, is air, but it's still not subject to the FCC stupidity. So there's no reason to not only censor the seven dirty words at all times, but even words that have nothing to do with anything quote-unquote indecent, like the Tom Petty song where he said, "Let's roll another joint." They censored out the word joint. And they're constantly taking out references to any kind of gun. Say the word "get" is taken out of rap songs, and things are digitized, logos are digitized, gang symbols, various things like that. I mean, yeah, it's not the nicest thing in the world, but it is the world. And if you're going to show music videos, you might as well show them the way they were intended to be made. After all, music is supposed to be an art form, last I checked. So leave it in the hands of the artist. And if people don't like it, they'll say so. But it's not the job of the... How did they say it? It's not the job of... Hang on, I got to find the lyric again. Ah, yes, of the tenured graph paper-brained accountants. It's not their job to tell us what is acceptable and what is not acceptable. Okay, and there's another fight on the horizon in the world of broadcasting. This actually is over-the-air broadcasting. PBS, remember them? The Petroleum Broadcasting Service? No, it's our nation's non-commercial network, over-the-air network, which has always been plagued by funding issues and not enough original programming. Well, here's something that they're actually doing, which is good, I think. PBS is prepared to do battle with the FCC over The War. Yes, The War, that's the name of the program. Next fall, the network plans to distribute an unedited version of The War, a 7-part documentary about World War II, by Ken Burns, told through the first-hand experiences of soldiers. Some of the veterans used profanities in recounting their battle stories. And that could raise the ire of the Federal Communications Commission. They don't like profanities. But PBS President Paula Kerger said it's important for public broadcasting not to just roll over, but to be very clear that in order to tell some stories, we may need to use language that, at the moment, the FCC is not sure that they feel is appropriate for broadcast television. She made her comments at the semi-annual television press tour last Wednesday, in Pasadena, during which she deplored recent FCC rulings and warned that the tighter restrictions and higher fines could have a chilling effect on public broadcasting. She pledged to lead an effort to challenge the guidelines. With less than 5 months on the job, Kerger, a former executive at the Education and Broadcasting Corporation, which is the parent company of two New York public television stations, is showing no compunction about wading deep into the fray over indecency standards. This is what we've been waiting for a long, long time, somebody to finally take this on. The PBS president told reporters that she recently met personally with each FCC commissioner to seek more clarity in their rulings, but came away with very little. If you're sitting in a local station, it's hard to figure out how to navigate through these decisions because there's no clear guidance. And so we certainly have a couple of cases coming up where I hope we as an industry will stand up and be bold and sort of bring it on. One of the most high-profile test cases will likely come in the fall of 2007. Oh, I thought it was the fall of 2000. You mean I got to wait another year for this? Oh, wow. That's when PBS is scheduled to distribute The War, next year. Great. PBS executives said they are planning to run Burns' 2-hour documentary segments beginning at 8 p.m., instead of waiting for the so-called 10 p.m. safe harbor, when children are less likely to be watching. I think this is going to be one of the seminal pieces of work of his career, and it deserves to be seen by the broadest possible audience, Kerger said. So if that means putting it out at 9 o'clock and putting flags around it, I think that should be enough. I think we should be allowed to do that. The PBS president said that The War is an example of a program in which editing out provocative language would diminish the overall piece. If you have someone telling a story about their experiences in the war, and in telling that story, a profanity is uttered, sometimes it makes a really big difference, and the impact of it is washed away or radically diminished if it's just bleeped. Thank you. And you know, the same thing applies to all sorts of pieces. It applies to music. It applies to visualizations of things, news stories, all sorts of things. That said, Kerger said each local PBS station will have to make the decision about whether they are willing to risk FCC fines by airing the program unedited, adding that she fears that many feel paralyzed by the recent spate of rulings. KCSM, a station in San Mateo, was fined $15,000 in March after a complaint about profanities in the music documentary The Blues. The station is appealing the fine, and Kurger said PBS is filing an amicus brief next week in support of its position. So, that's something to keep an eye on, even though we have to wait another year to do this. It certainly would be good to see someone actually take on the FCC and stop this lunacy, this total insanity. And what else has been going on? Well, of course, we have all been hearing about the nonsense in the Middle East, the war that rages on, and, you know, it's just gotten to this state where it just can't keep going in this direction. It really just can't keep going. The region is cursed with unreasonable, crazy people. And they're everywhere. They're not just on one side, as one side would have you believe. It's particularly distressing when the strongest of the powers acts like the most insane of the terrorists, and that's what we're seeing from Israel right now, unfortunately. The latest in Kana, the air attack that killed 60 civilians. Unbelievable, watching this take place through the eyes of the media. And of course, that led to, against all odds, Israel actually saying, we're going to suspend the air raids, the air attacks, despite the fact that we said we weren't going to do that. Because of all this pressure, because of the horrible civilian loss of life, we're going to stop this. And then they went back on their word, and they just started doing it again anyway. And the rest of the world is powerless to stop them. Powerless. United States, all we can say is, well, you know, you really shouldn't do that, but we're not going to do anything to stop you. We're not even going to condemn you. And we'll keep giving you the weaponry to do this, and the money to buy more weaponry from other people if necessary. We might as well have attacked those civilians ourselves. We paid for it by propping up a regime that does things like this. We bear the responsibility. And it's really sad because when Israel was founded, it was founded on very noble causes. But, wow, what do you think is going to happen as a result of all these civilians being killed? These innocent people, and everybody agrees these are innocent people. These are the people that live in southern Lebanon and other parts of Lebanon as well, that have the bad luck to be near where Israel thinks Hezbollah is based. And so they use that. They use that to blame Hezbollah. And they say, well, you know, we just killed 60 civilians by bombing their apartment building to smithereens, crushing them all to death. But it wasn't our fault. It was Hezbollah's fault because they're firing rockets from somewhere around there. And we have to destroy them. Therefore, we have to destroy everyone around them, and that makes it their fault. Yeah. Yeah, that works, right? That's people are going to buy that. And let's go even further. Let's go on TV and say that they're probably celebrating. Yeah, Hezbollah and people in Iran and all over the place, all those evil places, they're celebrating because what they saw today is exactly what they wanted. They wanted a large civilian casualty count, because now they can get sympathy. It's incredible the Orwellian way that language is being manipulated. These people just massacred 60 innocent civilians, and not only are they blaming it on the other side, but they're creating these images in our heads of these evil people dancing around celebrating, so that we get even madder at them and want to destroy them even more, and in so doing, let's take out some more civilians. It's genius. It's real genius, but it's unfortunately insane genius. And it's got to stop. It's got to stop by whatever means necessary. Now, by no means do I think anyone in that region is a rational person. I think they're all nuts. They're all crazy wackos. And I can think of far worse things than if any of those regimes ceased to be. And that includes Israel. If just stopped, if it just No longer. We're closing up shop. We're going to try this again some other time, maybe some other place. But it's not working out. It's just not working out. It's not you. It's me. No, it's just a bad idea. Nice concept, but badly executed. I can think of worse things. And one of those worst things is things continuing the way they're going. Because how bad can it possibly get? I've heard people, normally rational people, saying things like, well, Israel's going to have to use tactical nukes on these Arabs to take them out. And that's really the only way. You got to wipe them all off the face of the earth. These are rational people, and yet they're speaking in phrases that would make certain people 50 years ago very proud. Was it 50 years ago? Well, however many years ago it was. It's pathetic. It really is. And what started all this? What started all this? One soldier was abducted by a bunch of hooligans. Who knows who these people were, but was abducted by nasty people. So the reaction to that is to just start bombing and blitzing and massacring all over the place because we don't leave our soldiers behind. No, we care about all these people. And the media is just lapping all of this up. Because every time something happens, every time a civilian is killed in Israel, you find out their name. You see their picture. You see their grieving family. You get to go to the funeral. You learn about their town, their history, their grandparents. Everything about them is so humanized. And the same thing goes for the soldiers. But when people from the other side are killed, equally innocent people, they're just numbers. You don't see anything more than that. And the numbers are staggering. For every one person on one side killed, there's something like 50 people on the other side killed. And that's as much attention as they get, a 50th, if they're lucky. So yeah, you had dozens and dozens of people killed by this airstrike because a soldier was taken. Actually, that's why the other part of this this military action took place. That's the Gaza Strip where the one soldier was taken. Hezbollah, I believe they abducted two soldiers near the Lebanese border. And that's when all that got started. No, these are not nice people. None of them are nice people, and none of this should be allowed to stand. But there's also a thing known as appropriate reactions. And somehow this seems to be a very imbalanced reaction. What's going on over there? So I don't know. I don't know where it's going to go. But you have quotes like this. I mean, this is the kind of people we're dealing with. This gives you an idea of the craziness that's going on in that part of the world. You wanted an open war. You will have an open war. You don't know who you are fighting today. You are fighting the children of Muhammad, Al-Hassan, and Hussein. You chose the war to fight against people who believe in their pride. We are ready for it. War. War on every level. It's like they're celebrating. It's like they're celebrating. That's Hezbollah. Or Hezbollah's spokesperson. And you hear very similar remarks coming from Israeli civilians as well. We will wipe them off the face of the earth. We will destroy these savages. And it's like they want this. They want this horror to continue. And that, to me, is the worst thing if it does continue. Because war is something that is very easy to start, very hard to stop, as I think we learned in Iraq. So anyway, I don't know what we can do other than express our outrage at any time innocent people are killed. Thing is, you know, this bothers me because this is one of Israel's things. Why do they kill innocent people? Why do they target innocent people? Of course, when Israel does it, it's a mistake. When the other side does it, admittedly, the other side does target people, innocent people in crowds
with suicide bombers and things like that, and it's horrible. But more than being horrible, I think it's something that they don't know how to answer. How do you fight back against somebody who's not afraid to die? How do you fight back against somebody who has so little value for their lives that they're willing to just blow themselves up and take a bunch of people with them? There's no good way to fight back. But is the fighting, is the actual method being used all that different than if you just bomb a village and don't die in the process? You're still killing innocent people, you're just not blowing yourself up in the process. So it's not all that different. One looks more civilized because it's coming from the air. But the other side, they don't have airplanes. Yeah, they don't have the means to do that. They can fire rockets, or they can blow themselves up in crowds. Now, I'm sure they would prefer to be killing soldiers rather than civilians. But the soldiers are very well guarded. Soldiers are always behind all the walls. They've got all the armaments protecting them. That's why they're soldiers. Because they're doing their soldier thing. Very hard to get to them. So if you are an enemy and you're fighting somebody, well, you have to strike at something if you can't get to the enemy. So anyway, I'm not trying to justify what they do. I'm not trying to justify what anybody does. I'm trying to condemn the whole damn thing. Because that's what it deserves. All right. That's the bit of cheery news for this week. I really don't know where it's going to go, though. I really don't know. A couple of weeks ago, we were talking about North Korea firing off some missiles, which I still don't think is that big a deal. They're just demonstrating, hey, look what we got. Which we already knew they had. Then it was the Mideast. And now the latest thing is Castro. The latest thing is Castro being sick. Having an operation and handing power over to his brother, his younger brother, who's 75 as opposed to being 79. And Castro is expected to recover. It's not that big a deal, though he is 79. I guess having a tooth filled is a big deal at that age. But still, it's the first time ever he's handed over power. You know, I'm no big fan of that regime. I was down there a couple of months ago. And most of the misery that the people are suffering is a result of what the United States has done with the blockade or the embargo. It's not a blockade anymore, is it? It's just an embargo. But still, all these things can't get into the country, and people are living in poverty when they really should be living in much more comfortable conditions. And yeah, maybe a different economic system would work or would fail, but at least we would get a decent test. That's really all this is about, a different economic system. Seeing the reaction in Little Havana in Miami, though, over the last day, it's disgusting. People are out there cheering and waving flags and dancing in the streets, and you have congressmen, elected officials, talking as if it's a street carnival, a party. A festive event. We're talking about somebody who's, facing a serious operation. Yeah, okay, you don't like him, but still, we're not talking about Hitler here. To these guys, though, I think that's how they view him. You really have to establish some differences between the truly evil and the people who just aren't on the same wavelength. There aren't mass executions, there is not a reign of terror. It's a lot of heat and humidity, but he can't blame him for that. Yeah, I'm sure a better regime can be put into place, but it should not be a regime that is controlled by Washington, which is what they are talking about right now. They're having meetings about what to do after Castro dies, how to influence things, and you know how that's going to go. You know they're going to pump all sorts of money in there and try to overthrow people and engage in coups and all that sort of thing. And it's all about the rich people who got kicked out in 1959 getting their property back and becoming rich bastards all over again. That's what it's about, really. There's still going to be poor people living in the streets and probably in much worse shape than they are right now if a quote-unquote democratic regime is put into place. But whatever happens, it has to come from within. Not from Florida, not from Washington, from Cuba. So, I don't know. I find it really not too mature or nice when people are celebrating when someone is being operated on. It just seems really bizarre and strange and indicative of how our country and our way of life has changed so much over the past few years. It never would have happened, I don't think. Well, maybe it would have. Maybe it would have. But there was a brief period of time where I thought we had gotten beyond that. Speaking of Castro, Hugo Chavez, Venezuela's president, also another leftist who I guess we'd be dancing around when he's sick. He did something stupid, I think. He forged a strategic alliance with Alexander Lukashenko, the president of Belarus. Now, that guy, really, he's a true dictator. He's not a nice guy. He jails all kinds of political opponents and cracks down on democratic uprisings. You see, that's a difference. If there were democratic uprisings going on in Cuba right now, and Castro was jailing people and firing at them and things like that, yeah, that would make him a much worse person than he is right now. But Lukashenko is doing all this. And apparently Hugo Chavez is forging an alliance with him simply because Lukashenko is targeted by the U.S. as being a nasty person. Not a smart move. Not a smart move because you're basically aligning yourselves with people who are very easy to target as evil. Whereas Hugo Chavez, I don't think, is that easy to target that way. Chavez says, our countries must keep their hands at the ready on the sword. After a day of intensive work, we have created a strategic alliance between our countries. It is absolutely vital to protect our homeland, to guard against internal and external threats. The jaws of imperialism have both us and Belarus in their grip. Yeah, that's interesting. Alliance between the Belarus and Venezuela. That's the phone calls alone will cost him a fortune. Meanwhile, an opposition leader in Belarus was jailed for 5.5 years last Thursday for organizing an unauthorized protest against the disputed election of authoritarian president Alexander Lukashenko. Alexander Kozulin, one of two opposition politicians to run in the March 19th election, was not present in the Minsk courtroom to hear the sentencing, as he was ordered out earlier. But in his final comments in court, he denounced his trial as unfair and called the judge an executioner. The 50-year-old former bureaucrat has been in jail since leading the protest march 6 days after the disputed vote, which officials said was soundly won by incumbent Lukashenko, but was condemned as rigged by the opposition. Riot police broke up the march, beating demonstrators with truncheons. Western nations called the vote undemocratic and have since imposed travel and financial sanctions on Belarus. Yeah, you know, it's not the kind of guy you want to be friends with. It really isn't. Oh, it's time for this again. But we'll have to hurry. I'd almost forgotten. This is SUVs in the news. And the rules of this feature are as follows. It has to be prepared less than an hour before the program. And it has to consist of 10 stories having to do with SUVs in the news that have taken place within the last couple of days. And we've never had trouble putting this together. We've never had trouble coming up with stories or material. Because SUVs are just in the news a lot. All right, let's get started. A Rhode Island man narrowly escaped serious injury on Monday when an SUV crashed through the front of a convenience store. Tom Mass was at the cash register collecting $4 from... I don't know why this is necessary information. Collecting $4 from a winning lottery ticket and buying a pack of cigarettes when a driver ran his SUV through the front door of the store in Warren, Rhode Island. Police said the teen driver lost control of his SUV as he was pulling into the parking lot. It's a dangerous maneuver for an SUV, pulling into a parking lot. The driver told him he tried to brake, but the vehicle didn't stop. The SUV missed the man by just a few inches. Not so lucky in Iowa. An autopsy is planned on a man who died in a fiery crash at a child care center in the Des Moines suburb of Clive. Police say it's unclear if 24-year-old Pedro Castro of Waukee died before the crash or in the crash and the ensuing fire. The crash happened late Sunday at Kids Company. Police say the SUV apparently jumped the curb, hit the building, and caught on fire. Right, just like on TV. No one was in the building at the time. Smoke and fire damage is estimated at $90,000, in case anyone is interested in that. Let's go to Utah. Floyd Seal spent Sunday morning visiting with his great-grandchildren. But after lunch, when the sun broke through the storm that had pelted this region with heavy rain, he watched as his three great-grandkids headed into the mountains with their parents for an afternoon drive. He said his grandson, Josh Seal, 27, and his wife, Courtney Seal, 25, were familiar with the terrain. The family has spent decades canvassing the rugged area south of Helper by horse, ATV, and truck. I used to make a lot of miles up there, and they are doing the same thing now, he said. But as evening fell, and Floyd Seal heard a report on a police scanner about a young couple with three children whose SUV had been swept away by a wall of water while trying to cross the Garley Wash, he said he knew immediately his family was involved. They are very good young people, he said. It's too bad it happened. I sure feel for them. Missing and presumed dead is Jaden T. Seal. More than 80 searchers. Jaden D. Seal, he's the one-year-old. More than 80 searchers with dogs from Rocky Mountain Search and Rescue combed through miles of debris Monday looking for the infant who was swept away. And the rest of them were taken to hospitals with various injuries. And this story really goes into a lot of detail, which unfortunately we don't have time for. But swept away, the SUV. This, I believe, is in California. Bakersfield? That's in California, right? A 39-year-old woman died Friday night after being hit by an SUV on Ming Avenue near the Kern County Fairgrounds. Regina K. Tucker of Bakersfield was walking northbound across Ming Avenue when she was struck by a Ford Freestyle SUV. She was taken to Kern Medical Center, where she was pronounced dead. And this serves as proof that it's not all in the driving. It's in the mentality that SUV ownership is sort of like a neurological condition. It turns you into something that maybe you weren't before. So it doesn't always have to involve driving. Well, here's an example. A motorist crushed the legs of a man who leaned against his SUV and refused to move outside a coin laundry. Jose Garcia, 24 years old of Onica, which I don't know where this is at all. I'm sorry. They really should say where the state is. Oh, well. Suffered multiple fractures when his legs were pinned between a wall and the irate motorist Chevrolet Suburban. Police said Garcia leaned on the Suburban shortly after it parked near a Bradenton laundry. Garcia refused to move even after the driver revved his engine and backed up. The driver then pulled forward, slammed the car in reverse, and smashed into Garcia and a wall, and then sped off. His point was made. That's the Israeli way of dealing with it, isn't it? Lean against my SUV, I'll crush your legs. Okay, and continuing with this vein of not necessarily driving in SUVs, a Minneapolis mother said she knew it was wrong to leave her 5-year-old son sweltering in her SUV outside a bar where she was celebrating her 25th birthday. Keverly Hampton, a Minneapolis woman who gave a Faribault, Minnesota address when she was booked into jail early Friday, told the boy to stay in the car and not talk to anyone. He had been in the vehicle outside Gabby's Saloon and Eatery at 1900 Northeast Marshall Street for at least 20 minutes early Friday before someone notified police. It was 80 degrees at the time. A passerby saw the boy sitting on the front center console. For relief, the windows were down about half an inch. And also continuing along that vein, a Pasadena mother whose two-year-old daughter died after climbing inside a hot SUV in the family's driveway appeared in court on a charge of injury to a child by omission. Christina Alvarez, 21, a mother of four, wept as she left court with her family and her attorney after a brief appearance before State District Judge Janine Barr. She is accused of failing to check on her toddler's whereabouts for at least 3.5 hours Friday before the girl was found in the family's 1997 Ford Explorer. Boy, these things are definitely a real boon to society, aren't they? I gotta say, though, you know, I believe society is one day going to topple. And it's going to be led by a series of revolutionaries who will know how to, I guess, subvert the system, make it collapse from within. That's the way to do it. You make the system collapse from within. You do it in various ways, such as today, for instance, people who are turning on their air conditioners, people who are running loads of laundry and doing as much as they possibly can to make the blackouts happen. Those are the anarchists. Those are the ones who know how to make society crumble. And it's those same heroes who drive the SUVs, who know that they are depleting our nation's resources and adding to air pollution and massacring people in the streets and just creating a mood of fear. Those are the people who will bring down society. And I salute them, because I'm sure they have something better in mind. Okay, very quickly now, we have a couple more SUV stories and we gotta go. I'm sorry, the people are calling. You know, I said I wanted to take phone calls. I did, but there's too many things happening in the world. I promise next week we'll do a mostly phone call show, okay? I promise. Southbound Highway 99 was closed this morning for the second day in a row after an SUV rolled over. Both accidents have occurred at Wilson Way, where road construction has been underway for more than a year. I have no idea where this is. California someplace. 8:12 a.m., the burgundy vehicle rolled over, landed on its roof, and blocked both lanes, stopping traffic. And let's see what else. One person is dead after being thrown from their SUV after hitting another car. Police say not wearing a seatbelt may be to blame for the death, although I think driving the SUV definitely contributed to it. And the final story about SUVs in the news. An elderly man has died after an accident on Highway 211 Monday. This is in Wilmington. It's not Wilmington, Delaware, because there is no TV station known as WECT Channel 6. So I think it's Wilmington, North Carolina. Peter Richard Tatro, 70 years old, was driving an SUV near Southport Monday morning when another car pulled out into traffic from Enterprise Drive. The two vehicles collided, and Tatro was thrown from the SUV. He died at the scene. All right. Now down to the dealership to find the new large vehicle that you can intimidate your neighbors with. That's just about it for us here this week. We'll be back again next week for another fun edition of Off the Wall, and of course tomorrow night on Off the Hook. And again, sorry for all the people calling in next week. We will take phone calls, and you can comment on all the things I said this week and will say next week. And now, in honor of MTV's 25th anniversary.
I always talk like I'm Winkle and Wayne. I wear a sack baseball jacket everywhere I go. My job is to help destroy what's left of your imagination by feeding you endless doses of tropical mindless garbage. So don't create, be sedate. Be a vegetable at home and flack on that dial. If we have our way, even you will believe. This is the future of rock and roll!
Sugar-coated swill. You took that roll of bread and the pack of sedation, making sure nothing's up to the imagination. it was our beloved corporate gods claimed they created rock video, allowing it to sink as low in 1 year as commercial TV has in 25. It's the new frontier, they say. It's wide open, anything can happen. But you got a lot of nerve to call yourself a pioneer when you're too goddamn conservative to take real chances. Tin-eared, rap paper-brained accountants instead of music fans. Hold all the shots at giant record companies now. The lowest common denominator rule. Forget honesty, forget creativity. The dumbest by the most is, that's the name of the game. But sales are slumping, and no one will say why. Could it be they put out one too many lousy records? MTV, get off the air now!
Hi, this is Albert Collins. When I'm out in Stony Brook, I'll be listening to WUSB FM station. When I want to listen to some good blues, that's the station you tune into.